This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 17th of April, 1962. The title of this lecture is How and Why Auditing Works. This tape is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Now, this is still the 17th of April. After the coldest March in 70 years. On 22 days last March, the thermometer was below 30. This seldom happens here in January. I'm sorry, maybe you won't see the display of rhodies that you would ordinarily see here on the grounds. Most gorgeous sights you ever saw, rhododendrons here. Because we were out looking at them and many of their buds have been frozen. But we still have hopes that they'll manufacture some more. St. Hill Special Briefing Course. Now I want to tell you some very important facts of life. Now and then, when you're growing up, reminds me of Marine Sergeant. Marine Sergeant came home and his little brother had been having a bad time. So his mother, Marine Sergeant's mother, said, "Well, why don't you take your little brother out back and talk about the birds and the bees?" Marine Sergeant says, "Okay." So he takes him out and he says, "Now look, Joey." He says, "You know," he says, you get out your scooter, you go along the street, you pick up a coil. You're running along back of the hedge, you know, that kind of thing." Joey says, "Yep." He says, "Well, birds and bees, same way." I want to tell you why auditing works. Reference. Any publication or bulletin which discusses the two-pole nature of the universe. There's whole mathematics based on this, by the way, by a man that I was very happy to meet one time, Buckminster Fuller. Bucky Fuller. He invented Dymaxion geometry. He's a stress analysis type man, pure mathematics and that sort of thing. Dymaxion geometry proves that the universe couldn't exist without two poles. Everything has two poles. There is not one of anything in this universe. You've heard me mention this before from time to time. Now, in a recent lecture, I described to you the lowest level of observation. Or it's so low that it's non-observation. And that is being something. Remember? The fellow couldn't see it because he was it. That's your lowest level of observation. Now you see this in human behavior all the time. A fellow can't observe what he's doing. If he knew he was doing it, he wouldn't do it. But he actually can't observe what he is doing. And that's to a limited extent because he cannot observe himself. Now, know thyself is an old philosophic saw. And I think it was basically and originally introduced as a trap for thetans. The only way you could know yourself, of course, would be to view yourself. Now, the goal's problem mass contains in it anything you know about problems. Why does a problem hang up? Because it's postulate counter postulate, intention counter intention. Goal counter goal. And these two things, being of equal strength, hang up. When they're not of more or less equal strength, they don't hang up. An overwhelm occurs one way or the other, and you don't get a hang up. It's never any problem to be shot. You're just dead, and that's that. You see? I mean, if you're going to be seriously shot, it's not a problem to be shot. It's a problem to be shot at while shooting at somebody. Now, that is probably a primary problem, and that is why war is protested against and why it stays with us. Because it's a bunch of guys shooting at a bunch of guys. Wars which happen suddenly on a total overwhelm basis, one really never hears much about them. Probably they'd never be objected to either, and they certainly wouldn't hang up on the time track. But these wars, particularly static warfare, hang up because you've got balanced forces. And it hangs up in time. And the more balanced the force, the more hung up in time. That's all. You want to know how long a war is going to last? Just estimate the force of nation A and the force of nation B. And of course, in view of the fact that we're dealing with general staffs when we're dealing with war, we have to equate the stupidity of one as compared to the stupidity of another. And this is a balancing factor. Now, if that stupidity were equal, and the forces of both nations were equal, and the destructions accomplished were equal, that war would go on forever. There must have been something like this occurring during the Hundred Years' War. And that must have been the way it was, you see, and so it went on and on. Now, Gohl's problem mass means that the intentions of a type of beingness oppose the intentions of a type of beingness more or less equally. To hang up and become part of the Gohl's problem mass, it must be exactly equally. That, of course, is nearly impossible, which is why you have so few items in the Gohl's problem mass. You have to have equal opposition, just as we've really only had 100 years war in the last many, many, many centuries, you see. Why, it would be very rare that you would get a type of valence exactly against and balanced against a type of valence. Don't look at this as a going on forever, don't you see? Because a person has been many more beings than are contained in the Gohl's problem mass. Many, many more beings. And why aren't they hung up? Well, they just weren't at that delicate opposition of one versus the other, which gave us the fist against the fist, which balanced it so as to make it drift in time. And we get equal forces exerted one against another, and we get an illusion of no time. And so it just goes on forever in time. And that is why Gohl's problem mass stays with the person. And of course, all there is, all you've ever learned about a reactive bank, all that we know about mental energy, phenomena, and all the rest of it, it just is contained in this thing Gohl's problem mass. Now there's free track, where a person has not had an opposed lifetime. And running engrams, you run this free track. Of course, it's available, it's free, and it erases. But what he's up against is this non-free track. That's what's really rough, where the valence is versus the valence, you see? The type of identity is versus the type of identity. He has lived many lives as a water buck and has opposed in those lives the tiger, and has lived a few lives as a tiger and has opposed water bucks. And you get this kind of a grip. And there's going to be nothing happens then except this stays there in the bank, totally opposed to total opposition, you see? And it's just balanced in time. Now, frankly, it is so difficult to make two of these valences bash up against the other. It's almost unheard of. You see, the chances against it happening are just fantastically remote. That you get a hang up over trillennia, trillions of years, you see, of two types of identity. Oh, it'd go away sooner or later, don't you see? It'd slip, it'd wear out, it'd get erased. But those things in the goals problem mass have not worn out, have not slipped, have not gotten erased, have never become overbalanced, and are there in that delicate balance which maintains them in present time. And they're maintained in present time, and they are the reactive mind. Now, in view of the fact that tremendous numbers of minds available for these, you see, each type of personality, of course, becomes a mind. You have tremendous numbers of minds in the reactive mind with tremendous numbers of retrained responses. And then for each one of these that is hung up, you have an accumulation of locks. And these can number into the hundreds for every one of these items. Now, let's say, well, this is not an accurate figure, but let's just get some idea of it. Let's say they're average 200 items as lock items for each valence that was hung up. That would make 400 for two valences, wouldn't it? And let's say there were 20 of these packages. Do your own mathematics. Any one of those is a mind. See, the locks are as effective as the keystones of the GPM. It's just the locks derive their power just because you've got two of these things hanging up one against the other. Now the locks can become just as effective on the individual as any one of these hung up things. And before you get it straightened out, every one of those, see, in their thousands, are a separate mind capable of thought, capable of action and reaction, with set solutions, and now I'm supposed to all existing problems connected with them. They can be pretty dopey. They got everything in them, in other words. And that composite lot is the reactive bank. If you add to it the few areas of free track that hang on both sides, you've just about got the lot. See, this lifetime has certain areas of free track, and other lifetimes didn't happen to get mixed up in this. You get free track, and the individual can run this free track. Free track, oddly enough, explain a lot of things to him, but never quite unravels it all. See, there's always that reservation. It didn't quite unravel everything. You see what this is all about now? In other words, the fellow galumphed along, and he was very fine, and he was doing wonderfully, and he was a polar bear. And he went for a long time as a polar bear, and he went swimming in the ice, and everything was marvelous, and he ate fish, and so forth. And you're not going to find that. He didn't have any trouble as a polar bear. He's never posed anything as a polar bear. He went on being a polar bear. Of course, he got engrams as a polar bear, but that's fine. And then one day he decided all on his own, you see, to start being a seal. Up to that time, as a polar bear, he'd never eaten any seal because this was early on the track, you see. And he accidentally knocked a polar bear, you see, off of a ice pack, and this started getting very complicated one way or the other. So he decided, well, the devil with that. I don't want to be a seal. I don't want to be a polar bear. I'm going down into the warm latitudes. And here's an interesting looking animal. A water buck. Up to this time, he doesn't have any reactive bank to amount to anything. Well, the incidents and oppositions and so on. But here he goes. Now he's a water buck. And he runs away from tigers, and he antagonizes tigers, and he has a hell of a time with tigers, and one day he becomes a tiger and eats water buck and antagonizes water buck and has a hell of a time with water buck, and one day he becomes a water buck and has a hell of a time with tigers and just messes up tigers. And pretty soon, this is getting pretty gloomy to him. And as a water buck, he's blang, bang, concentrated on nothing but tigers. And as a tiger, he's blang, blang, concentrated on nothing but water bucks. He's been a water buck more often than tigers, but nevertheless, he's mocked up the counter-emotion of tigers and the counter-force of tigers often enough so that this is perfectly balanced. And from that time thereon, water buck can collect minds. Tiger can collect minds. This probably went on for a long time and nothing much happened, and he got into another sphere, and one day he became a priest. And then he was mean to the Vestal Virgins, and the Vestal Virgins were mean to the priest, and he was a priest, and then he's a Vestal Virgin. And then he got to be a priest some more, and he ate more Vestal Virgins, and he was a Vestal Virgin and ate up more priests, and we've got another one, but there could have been millions and millions, hundreds of millions, billions of years between the time the water buck and the tiger got together up to the time he became the Vestal Virgin priest package, you see. But because these packages exist, they tend to lock up the rest of the track. Other pieces of track run into them, collide with them, and so on. So the whole track begins to look like a snarly mass of something or other, but right internally in the middle of it, why, you've got these two poles, the water buck and the tiger. And just up adjacent to those, you've got the Vestal Virgin and the priest. And then you have got the God and the devil, and you've got all kinds of wild oppositions. But these oppositions, each time they are perfectly balanced, make a new goals, problem, mass package. And then these perfectly balanced opposing forces or opposing identities accumulate to themselves any other identity that's hanging around. And you get collapsed track. And these are represented in the bank by spherical masses. Inside this spherical mass are compartments of thought. There is an internal compartment of thought because the fellow usually had a head and he did his thinking in the middle of the head. So the goals problem mass tends to approximate a head. And it's got a think in the middle of the head, and it's usually empty. And there's a lot of little compartments all through the goals problem mass which have ideas in them. And you have the idea of force enclosing ideas or force enclosing thought. A trap thought, in other words. And these can be dramatized. They're not stretches of track. They're crumpled up pieces of, they're crumpled up track in spherical shapes and that sort of thing. And where these things are exactly counter-opposed against other spherical shapes, you see, you've got the water buck, the tiger proposition, these things are hung up one against the other, clank, to such a degree that neither one can go away. Now all this comes down to attention, of course, doesn't it? It comes down to all of the other factors you know, but this is the final material form which it takes that we call the goals problem mass. Of course, what's a water buck do all day long but look out for tigers? And what's a tiger do all day long but prowl around looking for a water buck? And it's just concentration. And eventually these two identities just get smashed together by this fact. You've got the dramatization of a problem. It floats in time, all sorts of other dramatic or dramatizing factors here. The individual is, years later, he's busy selling selling boats, you see. And trillennia later, he becomes a boat salesman. And he shows somebody that's very, very easy to paddle this little ski contrivance, you see. And he says, you just slide over the back of the thing, you know, and kick your hoofs, you know. And he goes on, and after a while, the customer says, kick your hoofs. Okay. He says, I didn't say anything like that. But he did. See, be a hangover, just a momentary restimulation. They revert to this type of pattern. You'll find some person's been a dog. And a dog and a cat, and they've got the dog-cat goals problem mass package of some kind or another. Very equal balancing there. If you've ever seen a cat lick a dog, why, you know they can be quite equally balanced. That's why they've always stayed foes. And this dog has been a dog a long time ago, and he hadn't been a dog for ages. Trilleni hadn't been a dog. And he's living a life as a human being, and everything's going along fine, and he goes to bed. And his wife thinks, it's fine. He's fine. His wife thinks he's fine. But, of course, he turns round and round and round and round before he goes to sleep. He has various explanations for this. But these explanations are all just based on the fact he's been a dog. Now, all of this is very obscure to the person and to the auditor, and you actually would be amazed the intricacies you'd have to go through to figure out what the fellow had been by observing his behavior. But after you find a few of these items in 3D crisscross, all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, oh, I see, yeah, oh, yeah. It all now becomes clear. It wouldn't be clear because, frankly, there were thousands of possible choices from which this sudden habit of came from, you see. Been most anything. Now, the two-pole character of the universe is something you should keep in mind. Electronically, no power can be generated in this universe in the absence of two poles. You have to have two fixed positions in space before you can have any electrical current of any kind. That is something that you would learn the hard way in physics. You can take two poles and put them smash against each other, or one inside the other, and you could grind away with little wheels and all sorts of things for, well, trillennia, without generating any power. There would be no electrical current of any kind whatsoever. There'd be no electrical masses of any kind whatsoever if there weren't two poles. There have to be at least two poles. Now, maybe you could have a three-pole, five-pole, six-pole, 12-pole type of arrangement. Remember, the basic is two poles. You could add new poles. You could do all sorts of things, but you've got to have two poles. And that's fundamental and basic. Now, the mind is composed of energy. Which exists in space and which condenses down into masses. In the reactive mind, there is no time. All time is now. That's because of the poised character of these valences. We must assume that if we have current, standing waves, electrical masses, flows, and other phenomena, which are very easy to demonstrate in the human being, there must be two poles involved. You're about to learn the facts of life here. There must be two poles involved. Otherwise, you'd never have any flows, would you? A person would never have any ringing in his ears, and frankly, would never have a somatic. It requires two poles, even to hurt. It's the two-pole nature of things that from which all else proceeds. Now, this sounds very intricate, and I can see somebody now saying, oh, no, not about electricity. Well, I'll tell you all you need to know about electricity. Take your two fingers, shove them into the mains. You will learn all there is to know about electricity at that moment, because you can actually put one finger in one prong. And you can sit there and hold it all night, and you'll never get a shock. You don't notice any reaction there until you put two fingers in there, one on the other prong. And then you'd know all there is to know about electricity. You would have a subjective reality on the fact that it required two poles to have any electricity go anyplace or anything happen. And that's a fact. All right. Now, what's this got to do with the CCHs? Well, it has everything to do with the CCHs. Auditing is effective only in the presence of two poles. Effective auditing is two poles. Now, there can be more poles scattered around, but it requires at least two poles for auditing to occur. This doesn't say that it's impossible to self-audit. This doesn't say that it's absolutely necessary always, everywhere, to have an auditor. That is not the case. because you yourself at one time or another run a burn out of your finger and have done a touch assist on your left ear or something and had it work. But in that particular instance, when it worked, you were operating with two poles. You were observing something. You might have been being a mass while you were observing the other mass, but you had two poles going. Do you see that? One of the things that's been a bugaboo to auditors from time immemorial is the PC who never cognites. He just stirs on and 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 on, and he'll run processes and processes and processes, and if he was processing himself, he would go on and chew and chew and chew and chew and on and on and on. And he'd get ideas occasionally, and they would come and they would go and they would erase and go on and on. What an arduous activity. The individual is running on one pole. Now the pole that he's running on happens to have thought in the middle of it and energy, standing energy waves outside of it. Well, he's in the thought area and he keeps running through the energy as a thetan, and he's just chewing on this energy, you see. And he gets into the thought zone, and he only gets the ideas that are packaged inside that thought zone. You see, he's being that mass. He is that mass. He is not viewing the mass. He is it. So, of course, he can't view it, because he is it. And being that mass, he is not viewing another mass. So he is being himself and nothing else and not looking at anything else. And there he could chew and chew and chew and chew forever. You see how that would mean? Can you imagine this glass? Now we're going to show you something graphically. Now just imagine this glass here as a mass of energy, mass, or anything else, well, just as a glass. And now we get the idea of a thetan being this glass to such an extent that he would never say, I am a thetan. He would only say, I am a glass. You see, he couldn't conceive of being anything else but a glass. And now let's say he's a very introverted glass and can never see you. This glass isn't looking at anything. Never see the table. Never see me. And let's say he went on chewing on this glass. Would he ever make any gain in processing? Well, the probabilities are he wouldn't. And there is the picture of the no cognition case. That's your minimum tone arm, no cognition case. The person is being something, observing nothing. Now, it'd be perfectly all right for this fellow to be this glass, providing he could also view as a glass something else. He doesn't have to view anything as a thing. He could view something as a glass. He all of a sudden gets the idea, well, I'm a glass, you see. And I'm glass and I can look at this cigarette lighter. Here he is, see. Here's a glass and here's a cigarette lighter. Oh, well, we've got two poles now. And as a glass, he can look at the cigarette lighter. He can as is the cigarette lighter. Things can happen with regard to the cigarette lighter. He can do some control of it. He can do some other things. And you're sure going to get tone arm action. And there's also something going to happen to the cigarette lighter, that's for sure. But you see, as one pole, the glass, and being only the glass, you're never going to get any tone arm reaction because you're never going to get any energy movement. How can there be energy movement? For energy movement to occur, or diminish, or increase, or anything else, you've got to have two poles. And if the individual only is one pole, and he's being that pole, see, he isn't a thetan being a glass, he's a glass. Why, of course, he could chew forever. And if he was getting no tonar motion while you were auditing him, of course, he would get no tonar motion while you're auditing, because there's no flow. But as a glass, he is made to audit up against the cigarette lighter. Ah, you get tonar motion. Ah, you get change. Because the cigarette lighter is also going to react against the glass, let me assure you. You see that? You're going to get case change. You're going to get a change of these masses. Therefore, you're going to get a change of ideas. You see this? You must never have, in an auditing situation, a one-pole situation, that's all. The individual is being a man. He has no masses. He has no ideas. This is your poor psychologist, the poor guy. He is a brain. He never looks at anything, never does anything. He never does a thing, you see. He's being a man, and that's all he is being. He couldn't be anything else but a man. And if he's a relatively introverted man, why, he's had it, because he never sees anything else. Never gets any changes of potential, never gets any anything. And that's why the psychologist concluded that man could not be changed. He concluded this as a scientific conclusion. And several years ago, we were always being held up to scorn as Dianetists or Scientologists, so we said man could change. And now he teaches in his universities nothing else but that man changes. He's tried to disprove testing to get rid of us. He's tried to do all kinds of things to himself to get rid of us. He keeps doing things to himself hoping we'll go away. And now today he more and more realizes what he is. He's a Scientologist. He hadn't found it out yet, but that's what he's being. You get the idea? We're probably terribly good for him. He's probably the first. We're probably the first thing he ever looked at since 1879. Now, get the idea here of a glass. No action. One pole. The glass and the cigarette lighter. Two poles, action. Now we see this easily in the auditing situation. Here is the auditor, here's the PC. Something on that order. Or here's the auditor, here's the PC. All right. Ah, if we can get the PC to look at the auditor, we've got a two-pole situation. Two-pole situation. That's also, you're going to get change. But the PC who never finds the auditor never has any change. There's the CCHs at work. And they're only as good as that occurs, and no better. When you don't have a two-pole situation in the CCHs, if you don't have the PC observing the auditor, ha-ha, you get no change from the CCHs. Has to be a two-pole situation. All right, we'll go into that a little bit further. But let's go on now to 3D crisscross. What condition must exist for 3D crisscross or some think process to exist, or any think process to exist? Ah, the fellow is being one mass in his mind, able to look at another mass in his mind. The fellow is perfectly all right for the fellow to be a mass in his mind, but he also has to not only be that mass, but be capable of looking at another mass in his mind. And then you get tone arm action. Listing, knowing, you're going to get tone arm action. But if he's only being one mass in his mind and can't view any other mass in his mind but this one mass, you're not going to get any tone arm action. It's as simple as that, don't you see? So at the stage of the CCHs, the auditor and the PC furnish the two poles. Actually, the auditor does not have to constitute solely the other pole. There's the whole present time environment to constitute the other pole. or any other pole, or many other poles. Once in a blue moon, we have taken a person who was having an awfully hard time and said, look around here and find something that's really, 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 really real to you. And they looked around the room, and they eventually, one person, found a silver teapot. And my God, she went over, and she grabbed a hold of the silver teapot, and heaven and earth couldn't get that silver teapot away from her. That was a one-shot command. She turned sane on a silver teapot. She found out there was something in the environment beside herself, a silver teapot. So she got a big change. One-shot change. Do you see how hard that would be? So it isn't just the auditor in the CCHs that can constitute the second pole. Now, is there anything in the PC that can constitute the second pole? Well, there's two ways that the CCHs could be run. Dummocks. Style, which is, well, a great deal of study of the steam engine would be about the best way to achieve this style. And all you do is observe this steam engine, and you observe the fact that it does nothing but have certain wheels go around and certain shafts move, and a certain hiss come out the exhaust pipe. And the auditor gets so that he can make his arms go around and his piston go and hiss at a proper tone 40, and he thinks he's doing the CCHs. All right, that's fine. Odd part of it is there's enough mechanics built into it that even then it'll work. The CCHs go from bright white to gray. They do not go from bright white to black. So this flaw in the CCHs might not be observed. Some auditor might think the CCHs were absolutely wonderful. He was doing it with the lowest shade of gray that you could obtain. CCHs will always produce a change on a case one way or the other. So you never observe the fact that they can be done completely wrong. You see how that is? I mean, there's a gradient scale of wrongness, and it doesn't ever get to black. You can't be absolutely wrong in the CCHs. But the degree that you drift from white is measured by the length of time the PC spends under CCH processing. And the more gray it is, the longer the PC is under processing. Do you see that? In other words, the less properly these are done. They can be done totally mechanically, and in 500 hours, everything is wonderful with the PC. You see? They can even be done totally mechanically and half wrong most of the time, and you will get some sort of result. You see, CCHs actually... It's almost, if the guy was as bad as shook the PC every now and then and said, I like you, you know, occasionally, or something like this. Something's going to happen after 500 hours. Something. Because you got a two-pole situation. You're working with a two-pole situation, regardless of what point of the tone scale. Now, let's now do it right. This is how to really speed up the CCHs. CCHs are a matter of bringing the PC to present time. Now, why do you want to bring the PC to present time if what you really want to do is getting back down the track into the GPM? Ah, that's because the GPM is upside down, backwards, locked in, crossed up, and there's so much keyed in present time that it takes you quite a while to get to these masses unless present time is more or less quote-unquote achieved by the PC. In other words, you can do a lot of keying out of masses before you do 3D crisscross and make 3D crisscross much more workable. So you do the CCHs for a while and key out several of those inverted loops. See, he's got stuff keyed in from the year zero, you know. Well, let's get that, you know, lined up a little bit. And he's got the vestal virgin where the water buck ought to be and so forth. And it's all messed up. In other words, locks are all curled over into present time. And he's dramatizing some lock on the early track so hard, you see, that you can't even get to a real piece of the Gold's problem mash, you see. The locks are so active. He's got a lock terminal, you know, a murderous husband. Got a lock terminal. It's just a lock. It hasn't anything whatsoever to do with the real terminal. But it's locked up on it. The real terminal isn't even a murderer, you see, it isn't even that close. The real terminal is probably a bad wife. And he's got this keyed in somewhere or another, murderous husband. It's all keyed in. Well, it's nothing that you would even want to come near in the GPM because it isn't even part of the GPM. You see, it's just locked up on it. You do the CCHs, that'll fall into line. Otherwise, he's got a problem with his wife every couple of days. He's like restraining himself from killing his wife every couple of days. So he gets a big GPM every day, every couple of days. I mean, he gets a big PTP. Every couple of days, he just has trouble. He's just having trouble all the time. Well, you do the CCH, you kind of lay this stuff back on the track, you see. Get him up to present time. Get him out of some of these things. Well, how do you do that? What's the expert, smooth way of doing that? First thing you do is bring his attention over onto, you do the CCHs two ways at the same time. You get his attention over onto the auditor, and of course, by utilizing communication, control, and havingness of the environment, you, of course, attract the PC's attention to the environment, because these are the mechanics of communication and duplication, that sort of thing, the things that you're using, you see. All right, and at the same time you're doing this, you handle the double mass factor in his mind. You not only handle the double mass factor in the environment, here's the PC being a PC, looking at the auditor and looking at the environment, you also handle this in his mind. How do you handle this in his mind at the same time? By maintaining two-way calm with the PC, of course. How do you do that? Well, you treat the PC's every twitch as an origin. Every time the PC does something, you notice that the PC doesn't notice most of these things that he does. You call the PC's attention to it. By querying, say, what was that, you know? Any way you want to say, you could say, how does that feel now? What, to PC, is the common response. Okay. Why did he say what? Why hasn't he noticed it? Oh, well, that's because he's being the single mass. He's being a somatic, for God's sakes. He's being a habit. He's not even being a being. See? And because he's being it, he does it. And you say, what was that? And the PC has to go back up here and look at what he's doing. And he says, what? You say that. Oh, that. Ouch. In other words, you exteriorize him from this manifestation. You see? It's actually very easy. Every time he does something, you exteriorize him from it. If you fail to do so, oh, pass it on. Catch it next time. Now, what are you doing in the CCHs? You're setting up a two-pole situation between the PC and the environment, which includes the auditor. And you're setting up a two-pole situation in the mind by insisting that there is something there. Except you insist very gently by asking, what is that? That there is something else there besides the PC all the time. And the PC has no choice but to slip out of the somatic so he can look at it. And then you get a two-pole situation going in the bank. And so you get change, 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 change. Now what happens in 3D crisscross? This again is an elementary situation. You're finding what the PC has been, and when he sees it, he ceases to be it. You recognize that when the PC is listing, well, let's take a 500-item list. You know he's been every one of those items. Every single blasted one of those items. Just this, the business of listing. You know, 200 trillion years is a lot of years. If you don't believe it, why, just think back sometime. Anyway. He's been every one of those items that he's listed. Let me say this, he's either been them or raised hell with them. He's had an intimate acquaintance with each one, that's for sure. Well, look how many, you made him differentiate 500 times. You made him exteriorize 500 times. Oh, this begins to look like Route 1, doesn't it? You made him exteriorize to some degree from 500 identities. Lest the one, two, or three he's being so obsessively he can't see them. And the last one the PC thinks is always it. Why? Because if he weren't being it, it wouldn't hang up and keep reading. If he knew which one it was, accurately, he wouldn't be in it. That's where we get the idea of the PC knows what's wrong with him. That isn't what's wrong. That's for sure, because if he can look at it, he isn't in it. See? What's wrong with him is what he's being so obsessively that he cannot observe it. So you've exteriorized him from 500 items to some degree, except the last one. And when that fine exteriorized, that was the one that had all the charge on it. That's a bum one. He gets cold, he gets this, he gets that. Of course, you walked him back to what he's being. Now you find the op term, and that's what he's concentrated on. While he's being this, he's concentrated on that. And you start getting this whole package start blowing up right in his face because you got a two-pole situation sitting right there in the bank, and it starts discharging. Now, the thing that makes the GPM hard to tie down and 3D crisscross a little bit difficult to do is sometimes he is so obsessively being the internal items that are close in and so slightly being the first items that you find. You see, he's still being them, but not to that obsessive degree that you might expect later, that he doesn't come close sometimes. This is not always true, but he sometimes doesn't come close between the terminal and the upturn. You think you've got a package like this, but you very often don't get your terminal package like this. You get a terminal package, this is the commonest early package, is you get a terminal and then a plausible opposition terminal, only there are 12 in between before they meet each other. See, if you're lucky, you'll hit them dead on the nose and they just go poof. When they don't go poof and they hang up, you've just got many more packages intervening. I'll give you an idea. PC finally finds the item child, and then we op-term this item, and it's badness. See? That was right at the end of a long, long intensive on a PC, by the way. That's not quite what I said, but to protect the case. Well, you see, we just fell short of getting them. We had all the items all coned down here to where there's only about two items left holding the whole bank together, and we got the item next to the item that opposed the child. That was a sad day. Because it meant we didn't have time to give the PC any more auditing, and it meant that we had to, more or less, to getting close, you see? What we had was this kind of a situation, see? And that isn't going to blow. Because that is the package. That's the package there. See? And we found this. What's there? Well, that's exactly what the PC's being is what's there. You see this? You got to have a two-pole situation. Now, anybody that knows anything about exteriorization should really roll up his sleeves. When we were telling people to bop out of their heads and go sail about, by the way, you're going to be about 6 minutes more. You're going to be about 10 minutes late for this evening. Is that all right with you? If I finish the lecture, or should I stop right now? All right. The PC has got a no knowingness, really, of his beingness. We look at this fellow, he's being a man. No, he isn't being a man. Actually, in the way down deep in the reactive bank, the most reactive thing about him and so forth, and it makes him do this, that, and the other thing is a water buck or something. Okay? And the reason a water buck is hung up is because it's a tiger, and sometimes he dramatizes the tiger, you see. And the last thing he recognized this, you say to little Johnny, why don't you stop biting your fingernails? And little Johnny says, his first reaction is, do I bite my fingernails? Say, wait a minute, you know? And he starts worrying about himself because he never noticed he was biting his fingernails before, you see? He never asked himself who or what would bite fingernails, so. He goes around thinking there's something wrong with him because he shouldn't bite his fingernails. Well, we don't know why he bites his fingernails. Somebody says it's an absence of calcium. I'd say it was a prevention from scratching out Waterbuck's eyes. Splendid way to keep from scratching Waterbuck's eyes out. Keep them all bit off. See? Real good. Now, if I don't develop claws, I won't get that nasty into any nasty situations whereby I suddenly get pulled into the water, you know, and drowned like last time I was a tiger or something. You got something wild going on, and Lord knows what the explanation will be. But a person starts worrying about himself. That is such loose language. What's he worrying about? Well, you have to step back to take a look. And all of the CCHs, straight through to the end of 3D crisscross, should simply be a succession of stepping back to look. And early in the game, one steps back as a beingness or an object or something to look at another object. And later in the game, one simply steps back as a thetan to look at a mass. You've still got a two-pole situation. You've got a thetan and you've got a mass. And all of the processes you're doing from CCHs right on up through to the end of 3D crisscross or exteriorization processes. Now, when we originally told somebody to be 3 feet back of his head, do you realize how often he came out as a mass? He went back in too, didn't he? The only thing we were doing was we were just overshooting his ability by about 100,000 light years. We were exteriorizing a somatic. We're doing all kinds of wild things. In actual fact, your 3D crisscross from the word go is an exteriorization process. Your exteriorizing ought to be past. His past identities, if you please. His past energy masses, if you please. His past problems, if you please. All of these things you're exteriorizing him out of, one after the other. He's not ready to come out of his head. Why, man, he hasn't been in a head for incalculable. So, in CCHs, if you run the CCHs very smoothly, you'll have present time sufficiently quiet and inviting and orderly and positive that the individual will start exteriorizing out of bits and pieces of the past. We don't care what bits and pieces of the past he exteriorizes out of, or if he does no more than say, oh, that's somatic. I wonder what that was. You see, he was being it an instant before it turned on. It's been there all the time, but he couldn't feel it because he was it. He can only feel it when he wasn't it. Now, as your individual is processed on the CCHs, he goes through a sequence of exteriorizations. From a little past this, a little past that, and a little past something else, and he keeps exteriorizing and exteriorizing. We don't care anything about what front. We're just trying to make him look at present time. It's going to shift the bank, that's for sure. Of course, we don't get him really, basically, all of him anywhere near present time. But it feels like it to him. It feels better to him. And when we've got him up to as much to present time as we can make it with the CCHs, then we ought to kind of clean him up so his rudiments will stay in and get him over on the 3D crisscross. And then, of course, we start exteriorizing him out of all the beingnesses he has been and all the whatnesses and so forth. Sometimes you get lots of whats and conditions that the person exteriorizes out of before you ever get a beingness. You get these things, you exteriorize them out of them, wholesale lots. And of course, if you're hitting these things on the button and you're doing a good job, well, he's just coming out of mass after mass. Of course, he's coming out of a mass as a mass. And as a mass, he is inspecting other masses. You will only get tone arm action to the degree that the individual is looking at something. And you won't get tone arm action unless the individual is looking at something. We don't care what he's being while he is looking, but he has to be looking at something. Now, of course, a substitute for looking, a lower scale lookingness, is a feelingness. And you can sometimes do a bunch of of feelies and get someplace with the CCHs where you might not. Now, knowing that, knowing what I told you there and so forth, you actually, you've got all this, you could dream up a whole bunch of CCHs. You dream up a whole bunch of them, you know. You could take your various drills of communication and to the room, to you, to this, to that, you know, and treat them all repetitively, you know, a good duplication. You could dream up CCHs like mad. But, of course, they wouldn't be any good if you didn't keep calling the PC's attention. Not just to present time, but to his bank, because he wouldn't come out of his bank, would he? He'd just lock up. He'd slide out of his bank accidentally. No, you can actually kick him out of his bank. You know, you say, give me your paw, mate, and thank you. And he gives you his paw, and as he does this, he says, boom. And you say, well, good. You thank him, you see, you finish your cycle. That's a moot question, whether you finish your cycle and ask or just ask. You say, what happened there? What happened? What? Oh, your shoulder. Oh, yeah, the shoulder. Oh, it raised hell just a minute ago. Yeah, it kicked. Ooh. Yeah, it did, didn't it? Big win, see? Experimenting out of the somatic. Of course, these somatics will turn on and off kind of automatically without ever calling his attention to it, and to the degree that you never call his attention to it and keep him two-way calm on the subject and keep him calm about the whole thing, to that degree, he won't progress. See, so you got a 500-hour CCH staring in the front of you. You could extend the CCHs to the degree that you didn't make your drills precise and repetitive and follow the rules of the CCHs in general, just the basic rules. To the degree that you didn't keep present time attractive for the PC. That's very important, see? He wants to do it for you. And keep his attention on what's happening to his somatics, or twitches, or something of the sort. See? If he did those two things, the PC will just sail on the CCHs. They're not a slow process. They're a very fast process. 3D crisscross is a fantastically fast process if you get the idea of how many exteriorizations per unit of time the PC is doing. Man, it must look like the telegraph pole's going by. To him, he's exteriorizing one after the other, one after the other, exteriorizing. You do a list, differentiate the list, null the list. Would have exteriorized him very well out of 497 and indifferently out of 2 and found out he was stuck in one. He keeps forgetting the one. It's hard to remember the one. How does he... I can't look at it. He's just remembering it. You told him, so he remembers it. Get the idea? And then you find the other side of it, and maybe everything goes clank, you know, or smash. Ooh. Or maybe it's been going smash the whole time, you see, and he eventually is the one. He can look at the other, and so on. He... You find him for days, he's likely to go around trying to be the water buck, looking at the tiger, and the tiger being the water buck, trying to say, well, I wonder how it really feels to be a water buck. I wonder how it feels to be a tiger. I wonder how it feels. I wonder how a water buck would think of a tiger. How would a water buck think of a tiger? I can't conceive of being a water buck. Can't conceive of it. And frankly, I can't make up my mind about a tiger. He won't even know he's dramatizing him. Because he's obsessively being them. And when you get into that combination, why, you need a little higher boost. But again, it's just exteriorization. But to summate very rapidly, it's a two-pole universe. Unless you have two poles, you don't have TA action. If you don't have T action, you don't have two poles, so you must be doing something wrong. That's simple. If you got TA action and you're getting items and you're calling the PC's attention to it and ARC exists, no matter what you're doing, you're exteriorizing him from things and you're straightening him on up and bringing him on up to line as a case. That's for sure. That's basically all there is to the theory and practice of auditing. Now, if you did that very neatly, you could actually figure out ways by which this could be done. You could take almost any PC and exteriorize him out of something, even if you had to kick him in the head. Say, look at my boot, you know. Kick him in the head, say, look at my boot. And I tell you, sooner or later, he'd see your boot, man. I'm not advising that sort of thing. It's much better. Sometimes a pretty girl sits there and audits this fellow for 5 or 6 hours, and all of a sudden he gets a kind of a dazed look on his face, and he looks across the room, and he realizes a pretty girl sitting in the other chair. First game. 10 hours later, he knows it's an auditor. Maybe that evening he finds out it's an auditor. Okay, well, that's what I wanted to tell you about this. That actually is the first time I've been able to phrase accurately and precisely as a communication unit exactly what auditing does, exactly what you're doing as an auditor. And it's a fairly brief, comprehensible summary, I think you'll find out. And it possibly will make your auditing a lot easier to do. Thank you very much. Good night.